Welcome to Brave Together podcast here on UK Health Radio, an empowering resource for the parents of children with disabilities, neurodivergence, and all unique needs.
Strike up a conversation with people you don't know. It has to be for 2 to 3 minutes. You have to make sure that you sustain eye contact for 3 seconds, and it has to be a back and forth conversation exchange for at least 3 exchanges. Nobody wants that. Like, we're already asking kids who feel nervous, and now we're expecting them to have conversations like their peers, and we put them in these awkward situations. Like, for me, I'd be like, I'm never going to a wedding again if I have to do that. Why ask our kids to do this when we wouldn't want to do it ourselves?
Hi, Bravies. It's me, Jessica Pate, Brave Mom, author, and founder of the nonprofit We Are Brave Together. On this expert episode number 232, Susanna Peace Lavelle and I welcome speech dude Chris Winger to share his neurodivergent affirming approach to IEPs, and wow, does he have a refreshing take on them. Chris is a neurodivergent high school speech language pathologist of over 20 years, an international speaker, and the creator of the Dynamic Assessment of Social Emotional Learning, a strengths-based assessment for autistic students. He is also the founder of NeuroAffirm, a first-of-its-kind worldwide interactive directory connecting providers and families. Globally known as SpeechDude, he has amassed nearly 1 million social media followers, sharing inspiring and educational content, always with a humorous twist. Friends, just a quick reminder to join our free community at wearebravetogether.org. Please support our growth by rating and reviewing this podcast and sharing episodes that inspire you. And of course, check out full episodes weekly on the We Are Brave Together YouTube channel. Now, please enjoy my conversation with the angel on earth, Chris Winger. Chris Winger, thank you so much for coming to Brave Together podcast. Susanna and I are dying to have this conversation with you.
I'm so happy that you reached out and that I'm here to share some knowledge, and I'm going to have a good time with this discussion. This is like my wheelhouse. I've been doing this for quite some time, and it's just been my passion for decades. So yeah. So thanks for having me on.
So we've been following you and Jesse actually for some time. And I have to tell you, like, this is so supportive, like just your energy, your intentionality. I just feel like you're our people, like all the way around. And you have been so eye-opening for me, your teachings and trainings, and I just can't wait to dive in. So thank you.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. You know what? A lot of it comes from my background experience of growing up as an ADHDer. So the things that I have learned, what works for me, what doesn't work for me, and just over time, kind of learning the language and the advocacy piece for myself, even when I attend IEP meetings now in my adult life, I'm always letting people know, like, I have ADHD. So if I tend to go off the beaten path, I'll circle it around somehow. So then, like, people already know, and they're not thrown off in the IEP meetings. And so it's funny how it just kind of all relates to me working with neurodivergent students and then being neurodivergent myself and what works, and then going from there.
So Chris, why don't you share a little bit of your story, a little bit more. And, you know, how did this, you know, genuine passion and love for your students, it just seems so palpable. Like, where did that all begin? Just because of your own personal experiences, you know, was there a pivotal moment that shaped this?
I was fortunate because I grew up in a household of parents that were in education. And my dad was at one point working as an adaptive PE teacher for high school. And that I still work in the same district that my dad worked in for 36 years. So the cool thing about that is him having a different lens of working with students. And his whole concept was, you know, help the person in the room that needs the most help, and you'll always win the race. So he was always helping those who needed the most support. So that was kind of my background in being guided with that school of thought. And he was the varsity baseball coach So I grew up in a family of I was a baseball family. My mom's side of the family was horse family. They're from Oklahoma. My dad's side of the family, all baseball. So it was kind of a cool merge there. But I was his assistant coach. And we had a student, an autistic student, who was a support member of the team that was the bat guy picking up the balls, helping with the water, and just me getting connected. And my dad saying, hey, you work so well with Daniel. Like, that might be something that you should consider in the future, you know, because my initial thought was possibly getting into teaching. But my dad was kind of like, no, you want to get into special education, because that's where I think that you're going to find your passion. And that's kind of what you value. So that's what I did before this whole speech thing, before speech, dude, before being a speech pathologist. I got a master's degree in special education. So I was a teacher before I became a speech pathologist. So the nice thing about that is that I had a very good idea of how to write an entire IEP, what it's like to be the teacher in the class, what types of accommodations work, and going from there. And gosh, it wasn't until 3 years after that where our district was in dire need of a speech pathologist. And so the superintendent reached out to me. He's like, hey, I know that you have a bachelor's degree in communicative disorders. Would you ever want to pursue that in the future? And if, you know, we got a position for you, if you don't like it, you could always get back to teaching. And so I pursued that. I've never looked back. It's so great because of the flexibility, right? Like, for all of us in all of our lives, we've got like these tenets of what we need as kids and as just humans. And part of that is having opportunities to play and be creative and be imaginative and connect with others authentically and build community. And that's what this position provided, which was really cool. So I don't really have a set curriculum that I have to follow. I have to follow the IEP goals with what we agree upon and what's in my reports. But the cool thing about it is, if I'm working on social groups, social connections, perspective taking, how to advocate for your accommodations, how to learn about executive functioning differences, how to work on co-regulation. Like, all of that can look so different with my sessions, but equally as important. And so I feel really blessed to have that opportunity. And the other neat thing about that is, because of my pursuit as a speech pathologist and wanting to advocate for change and for what's right and for what I feel is needed for our students, I took it to the next steps of becoming an active leader in the California Speech and Hearing Association. It's called CASHA. So I was the director of San Bernardino Riverside Counties, and we would have our quarterly meetings up in Sacramento. And Jessie, my fiance, she was the director for Los Angeles. So over time, we connected on projects and we had the same passions and the same values. And so that's kind of our mission today. So it's really cool because that's our pillow talk. Like, most couples pillow talk is like whatever it is in the news or with sports or whatever. But our pillow talk is like, what are some new strategies that we've done? What are some new ways of working with families and parents and kids? And she works with pediatrics. So she works with a ton of autistic kids from ages, you know, birth to like 10 is right there. And I am just solely teens. So the dynamics are different, but yet the same. The goals are different, but yet the same. The private practice she's in, I'm in schools, that's definitely different. So it's really cool to be able to get a variety of conversations and experiences through that.
Man. Okay. Well, first of all, let me just say bless you and thank you to your father. I mean, seriously, I believe Jessica and I believe, and I call her JP. So JP and I believe there are so many angels on this earth. Thank you. Thank you. Bless you. Bless you. Bless your father. Bless you. Bless Jesse. You know, I'm about to, you know, my daughter's a senior in high school and she's about to have her exit IEP. So speaking of IEPs, Chris, because this is something that, and by the way, your website has so many, it's so delicious. It's full of resources and tools and free things and downloads and videos. My daughter, Arizona, and I were watching some of them yesterday, and we also ordered Stripey McStripeface.
Oh, that's awesome.
The book, The Zebra Who Wanted to Be a Horse. I mean, we can talk about that later, but I really want to understand, because I've always had this idea in my mind as I go into the IEP since she was, you know, right before she turned 3, about just not focusing on the deficits. I'm like, can we say that a different way? Like, I didn't have the languaging and I didn't obviously have, you know, this idea of a neurodiversity affirming approach, which is how you call it. And so I'm wondering if you can, you know, tell our listeners a little bit more about the deficits-based IEPs versus neurodiversity affirming approach. And because I think that would be so supportive and helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's this historical medical model that has been the model that is usually followed with the IEP. It's basically taking standardized assessments and looking at the results and then trying to correct what a problem was that was viewed. The problem with that is that standardized assessments that are created over a long period of time have sample students that they make it standardized, right? And those are all done with kids that are not autistic. So you're already trying to take and compare the autistic neurology against an allistic neurology, non-autistic neurology, and say, hey, look, you can't do what this person's doing. So we have to force you into this mold. So we're already setting ourselves up for creating present levels in the IEP that aren't accurate.
We are going to take a brief break. Stay with us.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, brave friends.
So what ends up happening is if the present levels is not accurate, then that's what drives the goals and the services. So I'm going to give you an example. A student doesn't do well on a standardized pragmatic subtest, right, for speech. And the parents get a questionnaire where they're having to check, like, never, sometimes, often, always, right? But the language that's used is so pathologized and based on a deficit lens. Things such as, does your child exhibit weird or bizarre behaviors? I'm like, what kind of language is that? Like, it says, does your child hand flap? Does your child make eye contact or not? And the problem with that, or does your child perseverate on one topic? And if you check always on all of these things, and that's the language that goes in the IEP, right? So it'll say things such as, child does not make eye contact and they perseverate on Minecraft and they don't take other people's thoughts into consideration and they don't know how to have a back and forth conversation. And so that language right there that I just said creates goals where it says student needs to work on eye contact and work on back and forth conversation exchange about a topic that they're not interested in, right? So what that does is it creates more stress for a student because what they're doing now when they're working on that in an isolated environment in therapy is they go out at lunch or around other groups in class and their brain's now hypervigilant. Am I making eye contact or am I not making eye contact? Did I say the right thing on topic or did I not? Or did I engage in somebody else's preferred interest or not? Right? And that creates over time when we have those goals in elementary school. It's not uncommon for me to have kids in high school where the parents are like, we've already worked on these goals and we're still having a hard time connecting with peers. And my child still doesn't have a friend to hang out with on the weekend. Like, what's going on here? Actually, my child sometimes now in high school is stressed. They don't even want to go to school or they're socially isolating themselves and they're depressed, right? So we see that pattern. So it's like, well, what can we do? So that's why I created this dynamic assessment that gets away from the standardized approach and says, hey, what are the right questions to ask? Because life is a series of questions and answers. You ask the right question, you'll get the right answer. If you ask a question that's wrong or not the right approach, then that's going to direct the outcome, right? If I wake up in the morning always saying, what terrible thing's going to happen to me today? Then I'm already setting my day up for looking about what terrible thing's going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. Right? Rather than asking the question like, what are one or two things that are going to be growth today, right? That's just an example. So we ask questions such as, what are the things that work for your child when they're having a hard time? Do they have somebody to co-regulate with? What are some of the ways that they advocate for supports, or are they advocating for supports? Do they understand their disability? Do they know how to request supports? Do they have somebody that they connect with authentically to build conversations naturally? So that type of approach gives us the right responses and the right answers. And that then creates a solid IEP. In the present levels, I'm going to give you two scenarios of what it might sound like and the outcomes of the goals. So I'm going to use a hypothetical name. I want to use my name. That'll be easy. Chris, this will work. So this will just be an example of what we might typically see in an IEP. Chris does not maintain eye contact and he perseverates on Minecraft, like I had mentioned. And then that sets up our goals for reciprocal back and forth conversation. Here's how to reframe that. Chris does better listening when not being forced to make eye contact. He engages in conversations with like-minded peers who share a passion about Minecraft. Chris does better in class if given advance notice when he has to speak out loud in front of class instead of cold calls. Chris loves Minecraft, and that's what connects him with his peers. And bringing in his special interest into the IEP and into his goals will help him feel calm, regulated, connected. And that's where he'll build authentic friendship. Okay, so that description in the present levels now creates a goal for me, and it creates accommodations that work, right? So the accommodation might be, Chris, don't require Chris to make eye contact. He does better processing when not having to be forced to look at the teacher. Give him advance notice of speaking or being in a small group in class so he's prepared. Things like that work for the services. Goals might look like to help develop Chris's advocacy skills, or Chris will improve his self-advocacy skills by learning about what his IEP accommodations are. And then in a multiple context or settings, will advocate for those accommodations listed in the IEP to get his needs met, right? Chris will have a safe person that he's connected and trust in each building that if he starts to feel dysregulated or has a lot of anxiety or nervousness, he'll have a person to co-regulate with to help him be within his window of tolerance. Another speech goal might be Chris will be connected with like-minded peers where he'll have two conversations about his special interest to connect and tie into the group, which will help build expressive language skills and make him feel comfortable and have a love of being at the school. So you see the like significant difference just in yes. the language that we use. It's like yes. night and day. Yeah. So I always think to myself, like, if I am going with Jesse to a wedding, she's like, Chris, we've got my cousin's wedding, right? And then we get there. The very first thing that all of us do when we go with a friend or we go with our significant other to a wedding is we look at the list of what table we're sitting at for dinner. That's the very first thing we do, right? It's like, oh, I'm at table 4. Good. I know those people. Okay, let's go grab a drink now. But here's the thing. Like, what if we were stopped by the ordained minister and he said, hey, you know what? I know that you're at table 4, but we're doing something different. You have a plan right here that was given to us. And on here, it says that you have to actually sit at table 8 and you have to strike up a conversation with people you don't know. It has to be for 2 to 3 minutes. You have to make sure that you sustain eye contact for 3 seconds. And it has to be a back and forth conversation exchange for at least 3 exchanges. Nobody wants that. Like, we're already asking kids who feel nervous about having different ways of communicate. And now we're expecting them to have conversations like their peers. And we put them in these awkward situations. Like, for me, I'd be like, I'm never going to a wedding again if I have to do that. Why ask our kids to do this when we wouldn't want to do it ourselves? So we have to create situations and environments and opportunities where they can connect with the peer, where it can be authentic to them, but also where we're working towards goals. We're not just saying, hey, autism neurology is different. We're saying, because of those differences, you're going to struggle in connecting with some peers. So why don't we take what we know are the challenges and then create goals that do get those needs met and create an IEP with accommodations that do paint a picture of what can really help support our students. And that's really where you step up to the plate and hit the grand slam home run, right?
Bases loaded.
Bases loaded, Freddie Freeman. We've got the IEP that works. That's exactly right. Like, the IEP, honestly, when it comes to accommodations and how we structure it, the very, very first thing that we should prioritize is, how does this IEP make the student feel safe, like having a felt sense of safety? How do I go to school or class where I'm feeling safe, I'm feeling connected, and when you're regulated, right? That doesn't mean calm. That just means, like, when you're ready to learn, when I'm in my thinking brain, right? My prefrontal cortex. Now I could meet all of the other IEP goals. I can't meet any of the IEP goals or perform in class if my heart's beating the whole day. You know that feeling you get when you lean back in your chair and right before it almost falls back, you get this rush of anxiety,
yes.
Like, whoo.
Yes.
That's how our kids feel for the 8 hours that they're here. Our job is to say, hey, how could we create an IEP or a setting with teachers and an environment where that feeling is not there? Because when we feel regulated, we're going to learn. We're going to be more willing to advocate for our needs. We're going to be more willing to take chances on talking to our friend or a classmate by being like, hey, did you see the new Lilo and Stitch movie? It's out. Like, having these conversations, right? You'll be willing to take more chances if you're feeling you're connected. So that's really the drive home for, like, much of this whole discussion is, prioritize well-being, prioritize a felt sense of safety. And then what does that look like in the accommodations and services page? And then now we can also follow it up with, what are the areas that the child's struggling in? And that could be the academic stuff. And then whether it's OT, PT, speech, we're able to meet the goals more. It's a better approach when the students are ready to learn.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of information. So for your guests listening, you might want to pause and take some notes or go back and listen.
Yes.
We are so excited to thank PCSI.org for sponsoring in full the San Diego retreat this month. PCSI is a nationwide mission-driven nonprofit that creates meaningful employment opportunities for people with disabilities and veterans while delivering exceptional services to both the public and private sectors. Through their workforce development programs, including vocational rehabilitation services, community employment, and careers at PCSI, they empower individuals to achieve independence, personal growth, and long-term success. By combining sustainable business innovation with a values-based approach, they strengthen communities, challenge the status quo, and deliver outstanding results in every partnership. PCSI enhances the lives of people with disabilities through employment, advocacy, partnerships, and innovation. We are brave together. Thanks you. In 19 years of IEPs for my son, Ryan, who's now just exited the school district, I've never heard anybody ever say, does this IEP make the student or make Ryan feel safe? It's radical. I've never heard anybody say that. That's incredible.
Yeah, that has to be the driving, like for all of us, right? Like I want a plan in my life to where if I go into an environment or a setting or a job interview or anything, I want to just make sure I feel safe enough where I'm not feeling forced to have to answer things or things where I just don't feel safe. And that can come from a variety of things. A lot of this stuff too, because a felt sense of safety can also include in the accommodations, like what are our sensory needs being met? Am I allowed to wear noise canceling headphones? Am I allowed to take a movement break when needed? Like I needed that when I was a kid, to be honest with you, because I've got a lot of energy. And so if I'm told that I'm not allowed to stim or I have to have quiet hands and keep them on my lap, then that is all going to bottle up and I'm going to have cumulative nervous system reaction and I'm going to be running out of the class or I'm going to be pushing things over or I'm going to be yelling. It's like my last Jenga cube, right? It's like, all right, every cube is like a task or a pressure, right? It's like the last one could have been something small and then the whole thing collapses. I'm like, dang it. So.
Well, I think this is why, you know, honestly, like words, language, it's all so powerful. You know, I mean, I think about my daughter in the earlier days when I was also deer in the headlights with regard to her diagnosis of being on the spectrum. And she's also an ADHD-er and an anxiety-er. And so I just remembered her body language, even when she was being told things like, you're doing that wrong. You know, I mean, it's just like, why do we have to use such punitive language? You know, it's just not helpful for any of us at all. As human beings. And by the way, yeah, it's more of a shutdown, right? You have more of a shutdown. So I just appreciate this discussion so much. I mean, luckily I, you know my child who, and by the way, I can't stand the term quiet hands. What does that mean? Like so many of us are just, you know, anyhow, I just feel so grateful that I was able to just really see my daughter and just be able to be her eyes and ears before she was able to advocate for herself, which she does so beautifully now as a 19-year-old. And she does have the movement breaks and she does. But before then, she would hold everything in, come home and have epic, epic meltdowns, as I'm sure maybe you did, or you act out in certain ways. Like it's not all just going to stay in there. You've got to, there has to be some sort of release valve. So I appreciate this conversation so much, even as youngers, pediatrics, like ongoing adults, like I'm thinking about even like neurodiversity affirming approach to job interviews. What about that? I mean, I'm just thinking about everything in this world, you know? So
yeah, that's a big reframe. So the big key piece to a neurodiversity affirming approach is going to be that self-advocacy piece, learning about our identity, learning about our differences, learning about ways that we can navigate the world to request some accommodations or know what environment's going to help us versus what environment we can try to avoid and all of those things. It's interesting too, because you mentioned this happens quite often, especially towards the beginning of the school year, but like parents will sometimes get reports like, hey, child's doing great at school. And then at home, it's like a whole different child. It's like, wait a minute here. This child's like a feral animal, bouncing off the walls, things get knocked over, siblings getting hit, like dog just got punched. It's like the analogy that I used going into a setting sometimes, not always, but like masking where trying to fit in, trying to figure out where to initiate a conversation. Second period, substitute teacher, everybody's talking. It's like Jenga. You pull a block out, right? So substitute second period, pull another block out, too many people talking at once. And then third period, you get bumped in the hallway because the hallways are like packed with a bunch of kids bumping each other. Pull another Jenga block out. And then, you know, fifth period, teacher randomly calls on you to read a paragraph that you weren't prepared for, or a small group happens, pull another block out, and you're just holding all of it in. It's like a volcano building up. But it's like you get home, and then it's like, hey, I need you to go clean up your room. Boom! The Jenga, that was the last one. So to the adult, it looks like, hey, all I did was ask you to clean your room and you acted like that? This is crazy. Go to your room. Time out. No Nintendo Switch.
Yeah,
no, but it's like it was the last block on top of a very, very challenging and difficult day.
Stay with us, Bravies. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Brave Together podcast.
So I think like with that type of reframe, it really helps us realize for all people in the world, even for myself, right? When I have my Jenga blocks being pulled out, sometimes the collapse happens after work, but that's why it's important for like Jessie. She knows the dynamic too. Like we have to have somebody to co-regulate with or call, or even for our own selves, figuring out some ways to get our needs met. So, and that's why the piece, the IEP is so important in my opinion, is that we're not having to mask. We're just creating a situation where conversations can happen. So for speech therapy, that's what's great is I can have some autonomy with how I run my groups. So we do a lot of collaborative gameplay. I'll have games from Peaceable Kingdoms like Hoot Owl Hoot or Cauldron Quest or my first Castle Panic or games where we have to work as a team and there's no competition against each other. We have to use our voice to advocate for gameplay and we either all win or we all lose, but it creates opportunities for discussions. We'll watch some YouTube clips or talk about what's current on Disney Plus. We'll talk about K-pop Demon Hunters on.
Oh, yeah.
Like whatever is going to make a conversation feel natural. And then that's where we see the biggest growth.
Chris, if you could teach other teachers and other therapists just how to connect with teens, you know, what would you say? What would you do? Because I don't think that everyone who goes into special education, OTPT, speech therapists, teachers, aides necessarily have that ability to connect. Like, what would you like to say about that?
Yeah. So for like with therapists and with teachers and really helping support that connection with others, I like for me, it's a little bit of a process to work and get to know all the students. And that's why I mentioned like that dynamic assessment that I created. There's a student form. And on that form, I'm getting information about what the students want. Do you want to meet a friend? Do you want to hang out with them at school or after school one time a week, once a month? And we're kind of learning about special interest. What are some things that they like to talk about? So once I get to know the students, I try to figure out which students would be grouped together that I think over time a friendship could form and then just create. Yeah. So it's basically like me being the guide. That's kind of my job, really. It's like not really a therapist. I'm more of like a coach or a guide in a way. I'm like, how can we make this happen? So I'm not trying to fix anybody because that's my whole mindset is, look, we're not broken. We just need some support to get from point A to point B. Yeah. So That's like it in a classroom for a teacher. Really, it could be before or after school, or it could be during, like right after class, like, hey, asking the student, what works for you? Would you like me to let you know when small groups are going to be happening? Would you like me to guide you? Or what types of thing can make the learning experience for you this semester or this school year helpful for you? And the other thing too, on like on my end for my students, before school starts, the day before, I always email the teachers with like a 1 or 2 sentence statement. This could probably be really effective too for parents, but it'll say something like, hey, so Johnny's in your class and he's really passionate about the Pittsburgh Steelers and wrestling. He loves John Cena. Sometimes he might want to talk about that, which might come across as being off topic. You can guide him with this way. And sometimes he might feel a little overwhelmed. So just identifying if he needs to step out, or you could give him an envelope that's fake to send to the admin office just so he can go for a movement break for 2 minutes. And those are some things that could really be effective for him. I really appreciate your support for the year. Let me know if you have any questions. So like I'm giving literally like 2 sentences, a snapshot of what are the things that the teacher needs most, so we're prepared for the whole year. Like, honestly, that's like the, what is it? I don't know, the like an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure or whatever. It's like that little email. Or even if I see the teacher in the hallway, it's like, hey, this is the student that you have. Because what we're doing is we're building perspectives for the teacher to already have information of, okay, I was given a heads up. This is the why. And here's how I can help guide that student.
Okay. We love you. I mean, seriously. Wow. Beautiful. That's so
fantastic.
Extra mile. Yeah. So intentional. It's so helpful. It's so wise. It's such a move of advocacy for that student to have a more successful experience. And frankly, for the teacher to have a more successful experience with that student. Ugh.
Yeah. And we're framing it again with like a neuroaffirming approach, a strengths-based approach. We're not saying the student can't make eye contact and doesn't have friends and can't have conversations and hand flaps. We're not saying any of that. Like, we're just saying, here's the strengths of the student. This is what they like. Here's where they're going to need some support. And here's the ways that have been successful in the past. And then ending it with the, like, if you have questions, let me know, but I appreciate your support. So I always recommend to parents or even for therapists, keeping it short, because teachers get a lot of emails. And the idea behind it is, we want it to be effective. And in order for it to be effective, it can't be like an 8 paragraph statement from ChatGPT. It has to be like 2 bullet points. Like,
that's right.
So the teacher will read it.
Yeah.
That's so good. So good. Okay. Should we switch gears before we go and talk about your book?
Oh, that would be cool. I have 2 things that could be really helpful, just depending on the age and the need. But yeah. Back to the Stripey McStripe Face. It's on Amazon. If you go to speechdude.com/zebra, you could read all about it and get more information on it. But essentially, the idea is about this zebra who is out in the savannah lands with all these horses and realizes, hey, I am a broken horse. Like, I need to be like a horse. So the zebra essentially tries to rub off his stripes, tries to run like them and, you know, do the zebra neighing, and finds... The zebra finds himself stripy in a dark place and is guided by this wise owl named Hootie, who takes him out of the dark place, which is this canyon, and says, look, other animals are also trying to be something different. Like, this hippo is trying to fly. A giraffe tries to run and gets his neck wrapped around a tree. And ultimately, at the end, the zebra realizes, like, hey, I'm a zebra, but I'm going to be myself and I'm going to be proud of my stripes. And in doing that, it influences all the other animals as well. And it creates identity. And that becomes a language I use for my students, which is, hey, you're not a broken horse. You're totally cool zebra, right? Like, I want to be a zebra. And then that's the language we use. Like, it's okay to be different. It's okay to be a zebra. Like, you're not a broken horse. So it comes with an activity book, which is cool. There's a coloring activity and some pre and post guided questions. But that is a game changer for all ages. It's I got an illustrator for it. So when I was writing this thing, I didn't realize the level of difficulty that when you're writing a book, you have to keep in mind the illustrations so they have something that can be, that can come to life. And so that's the coolest part about it is I was guiding the illustrator and we worked back and forth. So the images that are in there are just freaking awesome. I love it. I'm like, yes, this is exactly what I want. And then the other book I have is just more of a learning about ourselves and identity. And that's the Neurodiversity Affirming Activity book. So that's also at speechdude.com/book. That one's really cool because it's 50 pages of, you can print out and learn about ourselves and about our strengths from a neurodiversity lens. And then it also talks about autistic individuals that had differences, but because of those autistic differences is what led them to where they're at. So for example, Satoshi Tajiri is the creator of Pokemon. He's autistic. When he was little, he had a passion of space and of bugs. He just spent all sorts of time learning about these things. And then he was like creating a game. And over time, that's where Pokemon came from. So being autistic and having that hyper focus on his special interest and understanding, hey, I don't like being around a lot of people. I like diving into my passions. That's what keeps me focused. And he created an awesome thing about it. So there's several stories throughout that book. But really, when it comes to, especially with teens, identity, sometimes some of our kids have this perception because of the news or because of old media or whatever, like autism's this bad thing. And so then they end up saying, I don't want this anymore. I hate being in special ed, or I hate this. So it's like, we're trying to come and say, hey, look, here's autistic culture is a thing. And let's find some people that you resonate with and find who you are, because you're a zebra. That's awesome. And here's some tools and strategies that can make zebra life fun, happy, and harmonious. That's it right there, huh? We've got it. So
I think we should buy a bulk order and put it in our retreat goodie bags.
Yes. Oh, that would be amazing. That would be amazing. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up during the show too. Cause yeah, those are the things I spend a lot of time on and passionate about, how to make change, but in a healthy and effective way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So done. And so, I mean, more, please. So more, please. And even though my daughter is 19 and total K-pop demon hunter dresses and, you know, character and all that, she loves things like Stripey McStripe Face. She will read that every night.
Amazing.
You know what I mean? So she's like this cool, hip teen. And
I love that.
You know, so I'm looking forward to all of the things.
Yeah. Awesome. Definitely check it out. It's all at speechdude.com. And then that's like my social media stuff too. Everything's SpeechDude. It's funny because sometimes when I'm out in public and some people might recognize me from social media, they don't know my name's Chris. I just go by SpeechDude. They're like, hey, are you SpeechDude? It's the funniest thing. And I always say, I'm like, hey, yeah, what's up? Are you within the wheelhouse of neurodiversity stuff? And my name's Chris. But it's too funny that it's my name now. My first name, Speech. Last name,
Dude. Right. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, right.
Before we go, Chris, is there anything you haven't said that you really like to share with our, you know, audience?
Oh, my gosh. We covered so much. I know that. For wherever your journey's at, I think that's, learning this new mindset and mind shift really can be helpful. And I just think in my own world too, sometimes because of social media, not everybody's going to agree with everything, which is totally fine. But I've always stuck with this concept that you can change the world or you can make everyone happy, but you can't do both. So I'm here to change the world and I'm trying to just give information that can be helpful for the next generation. That's the big one for me.
We thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Yes, I appreciate your time and having me on as a guest. That was awesome.
Thank you. Have a beautiful day and thank you for all that you do.
Yes, thank you. Okay, bye everyone.
Thanks so much for listening today on UK Health Radio. Do us a favor and leave us a review and a rating so that this podcast can get into the ears and the hearts of more and more moms. Did you know that Brave Together podcast is an extension of our nonprofit organization, We Are Brave Together? We Are Brave Together serves an international community of caregiving moms, offering support groups that are virtual and in person, educational resources, and low-cost weekend retreats all over the United States. We've also published two books, our first anthology of caregiving stories entitled Becoming Brave Together, Heroic, Extraordinary Caregiving Stories from Mothers Hidden in Plain Sight, and our newest release, Suddenly Brave Together, Letters to Caregiving Moms at a Defining Moment in Their Lives. Both books offer stories of hope and transformation and encouragement and validation for every parent caregiver. To join us today, go to wearebravetogether.org. Our support and sisterhood awaits you. Brave Together podcast is for entertainment and education purposes only. It's not a substitute for professional care and should not be relied on for medical or mental health advice. The use of any content on our podcast, links, show notes, or on our website is to be done at your own personal risk. Please seek out a professional to assess your own medical or mental health concerns, because we are all beautifully complex and the content of this podcast is for a broad audience.